You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Sabrina Slater.
Hello.
Hi, Sabrina. It's good to have you here this morning.
It's nice to be here.
So Sabrina, the way the show starts is with one huge question, but it allows you to kind of make some choices. Who are you? What do we need to know about you to start this conversation? And the point of the show is to help us get to know each other across our many differences in this region and our many similarities.
Right. Yeah. So who am I?
Who are you?
I would say that I am prayerfully a good lover of people and of God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that influences everything that I do and who I am. So that would be who I hope to be. I also have
That's your aspirational
that's
self.
That's my aspirational self. I'm also, what, a daughter, a sister, a good friend, somebody who's lived both internationally and, of course, in the States, somebody who's newer to the region, a pastor. I'm all full of surprises.
Yeah.
That's who I am.
Yes, 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 yes. And you are the first person out of 400 interviews to introduce yourself as I am a good lover, or I strive to be a good lover.
Yeah.
And that is a very powerful, powerful claim.
Hey.
Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. I get it. I get it. So we're going to go into some of unpacking some of that stuff along the way. What should we start with musically? How you know, who are you? What music have you brought to share with us today? And what do you want to start with?
Right. So the assignment for everyone, I'm sure they all know, but is to select some songs. So the one that I'll start with, I guess, for today is just the first one I typed in the email. Neo's Miss Independent, if you will.
Okie doke. And we will. And do you want to say something about it now or something after we play it, or just let it speak for itself?
I think you can let it speak for itself. But of course, if you want to dance, y'all, dance.
Get up and dance.
Yes.
It's a little tight in the studio. But
you but don't need you. Hey, I can't figure it out. There's something about her. Cause she walk like a boss, talk like a boss, manicure and nails to set the pedicure off. She's fly effortlessly. And she move like a boss, do what a boss do. She got me thinking about getting it. I look at her and it makes me proud. There's something about her. There's something oh so sexy about. Kind of woman that don't even need my help. She says she got it, no doubt. There's something about her. Cause she work like a boss, play like a boss. Car and a crib, she about to pay them both off. Won't you come and spend a little time? She got a wrong thing.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest is Sabrina Slater. So Sabrina, I meant to ask you this before, but I spaced it out. What brought you to this region?
God. And the wonderful people of Spencer and Bennett in New York. I happen to have the distinct pleasure of serving as the pastor of Christ the King Fellowship Presbyterian Church. And they were searching for a pastor, and I was searching for a congregation to serve and a community to grow with and to mm-hmm. love in. And through all of the interviews and the preaching in person and meeting folks and just discerning and praying, I was led to hear. So I packed on up and moved myself up in the end of July.
and up is from where?
Up is from where? Well,
Or where is from where?
Where is from where? I always am one who loves to say I'm from my mom, which is true. But more regionally, I was born and raised in Washington State, Spokane, mm-hmm. Washington.
Sure.
And then I left Spokane to go to college when I was a wee little undergraduate. I went to Lehigh University in Bethlehem, PA.
So that brought you near here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, yep. And then I went back east, or no, back west. I worked in California at Humboldt State University in higher education. Then I came out east again. I worked at Wagner College in Staten Island, New York. Yep. Then I heeded the call to, at least to seminary. I went to Princeton Theological Seminary in Princeton, New Jersey. After I graduated with my Master's of Divinity, I actually had a fellowship, and I essentially traveled the world for a year, went all around, and then returned, served a church in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, or Allentown, Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. for the summer. Then I had the opportunity to represent the Presbyterian Church USA in Geneva, Switzerland at the Bose Ecumenical Institute last fall, so from September through January of this year, 2017. And then I came back stateside and began searching where I would be serving.
Wow. 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 That is quite a trajectory. I mean, in this region, you've probably discovered there are many people mm-hmm. who have similar sorts of ricochets mm-hmm. with all sorts of both serendipity and purpose and lack of direction all together wound into these wanderings that we involved in.
The journey of life.
Yep, 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 mm. yep. So with that thumbnail sketch, what are some of the things that you've had, experiences you've had to have to know how to value the life that you value living now?
How does one even start to answer that?
Yeah. It's more about what are you aware of today that's really important mm-hmm. that you didn't necessarily know yesterday, and it won't necessarily be important tomorrow, but it may. Mm-hmm. But it's really, it holds your attention and it helps you to understand where you are now and where you're headed.
Right. This is one that I feel I've known for a while, but you grow into an understanding mm-hmm. of things, right? So one of the largest blessings that I've ever received in my life, and I've said this for years, is the family that I was born into. I was born into a loving family. I am a daddy's girl. I love my mama, and my brother is the best. And more than that, I was born into a legacy of those who believe in God and live out their faith in real ways, in everyday ways. And on both sides of the family, I've been covered in prayer for generations. Mm-hmm. So I don't take that so lightly. And it shapes very much who I am and the encouragement that I received, and that I always knew I was loved. Because
right.
I was loved well, I was able to fly. I was able to try different things and go different places because I'm very rooted at home.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And that family extends much larger than my biological family right. because I've come from communities. So people have been pouring love into me for years.
Yep. Yep. The listener can't see me, but I'm smiling. you use the expression, I've been covered in prayer for generations, I believe. Mm-hmm. And to non-religious listeners, which I would guess at least half or three quarters of my audience is.
Fair enough. What up, y'all?
And the words to be covered in prayer is to be to have that little boat of your life floated mm-hmm. as the plea from those from whom you have come, whether you came biologically mm-hmm. or came because they want to see the world a better place because of you and every other you like you mm-hmm. that is out there. And that intention that we hold each other in and that people can hold each other in has a way of opening doors and creating trust mm-hmm. and a way of living in the midst of even tough times because you have that behind you.
Yes, you can do a whole lot when you know somebody has your back or somebody's covering you in prayer, holding you in prayer, and they wishing the best for you.
Right, and they may not save you from trial. They may not save you at all, but they are there for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can weather the storm when you have a good hand to hold.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, so I did. So that is very, very powerful. And you made me remember of one thing that just was serendipity for me as a father, was that when my daughter was 3 years old, there was a picture taken of me throwing her up in the air and catching her, and they caught her flying up in the air as I'm holding my hands up. Mm-hmm. And when she got ready to go to college, which she went in Pennsylvania too, to Gettysburg.
Fantastic school.
I wrote on the back of this picture, "We've been practicing launching you for years, and now you're ready to fly."
Amen.
And that just felt like that, and being able to be grounded in that way. Mm-hmm. And for me, the story was that my dad that died when I was 8.
Okay.
So being a parent for me was doing what had not been done in that way. But old men in town, in rural Northwest Missouri, kind of took me under the wing with that same kind of prayerfulness, with that same kind of intention.
Absolutely.
That you were talking about.
Mm-hmm. I just got to experience that in a very real way back in my hometown, Spokane, Washington, mm-hmm. when I was officially ordained to the ministry. These are people who in the church, when I was a little kid and said I wanted to be baptized, they also took vows to nurture me. And so to be able to go back and to be ordained, which in some ways is the culmination, in other ways is just another step on the journey of this faith life that I've been walking and enjoying, was rather beautiful to be with the people who were there when I was baptized, for us all to remember those vows and for mm-hmm. them to lay their hands on me and again, physically cover me in their prayers mm-hmm. as I embark on this journey.
Yeah. You said we're going to be unpacking every sentence forever. The way you love, admire, and cherish your family is not something that some people can say with the kind of unselfconscious directness that you just said it.
Mm-hmm.
What makes your ownership of that different than others, or what makes your awareness of it different?
Perhaps it's the awareness that allows me to take ownership of it. When we grow up in a certain context, we understand that to be the norm. And so I grew up with the norm of being well-loved and cherished and encouraged and told you can do anything, and a space where you could engage challenging questions as well. And also in that space where Christianity did not have to look just in one sense. For example, I grew up in the legacy of one of my grandfathers who often was not at church on Sundays because he was a service station attendant and owner. And on Sundays was when he would do the work on widows' cars and single moms' cars, and sometimes at low cost and sometimes for free, because sometimes it's incredibly important to actually pay for what you receive. And so that's some of the legacy that I receive. So your faith is something that you live out every single day, and it doesn't require a certain type of job or whatnot, but it's something that you live. It's the core of who you are. So that's how I was raised. And then I went and I worked in higher education, and I got to hear firsthand the stories of brokenness that are all around. And I got to be witness to that in different ways. And so I had to learn that my understanding of love is not many people's normals. Right. And that brokenness is real, and it breaks, in my opinion, it breaks God's heart. And so I became one who could perhaps offer some of that love in spaces where it was missing and it should never have been. But it also means that I am even more grateful for the context that I come from, because it's not the normal for so very many people.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm going to suggest let's go to a song. What should we? What should we play?
Goodness me!
You're listening to WRFI Watkins Glen, Ithaca. Our guest on this episode is Sabrina Slater.
Let's go to John Legend, All of Me. And I will introduce it in the sense that the very first time that I preached my senior sermon at Princeton Theological Seminary, I actually quoted John Legend as a great theologian, who really is inviting us to understand how much God loves us. Mm-hmm. So consider God's voice being John Legend's in this and us being the other.
Thank you.
Without your smart mouth drawing me in and you kicking me out, you've got my head spinning, no kidding, I can't pin you down. What's going on in that beautiful mind? I'm on your magical mystery ride and I'm so dizzy, don't know what hit me, but I'll be alright. My head's underwater, but I'm breathing fine. You're crazy and I'm out of my mind. 'Cause all of me loves all of you. Love your curves and all your edges, all your perfect imperfections. Give your all to me, I give my all to you. You're my end and my beginning, even when I lose, I'm winning. 'Cause I give you all of me, and you give me all of you. How many times do I have to tell you? Even when you're crying, you're beautiful too. The world is beating you down. I'm around through every mood. You're my downfall, you're my muse. My worst distraction, my rhythm and blues. I can't stop singing, it's ringing in my head for you. My head's underwater, but I'm breathing fine. You're crazy and I'm out of my mind. 'Cause all of me loves all of you. Love your curves and all your edges, all your perfect imperfections. Give your even when I lose, I'm winning. 'Cause I give you all of me, and you give me all of you. Give your all to me. Give my...
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest is Sabrina Slater. So, Sabrina, when you... I just want to play with the theme from the song. When you're all in,
mm-hmm.
And things change.
Yeah.
You have to roll with them. Because
absolutely.
You've kept nothing in reserve. You've kept nothing off to the side. You're just there.
Mm-hmm.
How did you learn to live that way? I mean, that's not just about love. That's about kind of a complete surrender to reality as you experience it. And maybe that's what you mean by love.
Mm-hmm.
but how did you, I mean, I don't know how old you are, but I'm assuming that you're
old enough.
but that's a lesson a lot of people don't get around. They either learn it early in life,
right.
Or it comes sometime after 40.
Hmm. Fair enough. There yet.
Yeah, and so what do you envision for yourself? How do you live day to day with that kind of openness and availability in a way that neither drives yourself crazy?
Mm-hmm.
Nor poses an undue burden on those who you can focus with such complete attention.
Right. So a prayer that I have and have had for a while is that I would be able to see with God's eyes and hear with God's ears, and have a heart that breaks where God's heart breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And that invites us to be incredibly open. And that hurts, right? I think God's heart breaks a lot.
Yep.
So there's this great capacity to feel. But again, because I have been so well loved, I, by the grace of God, have quite a bit of capacity to feel both great sorrow
mm-hmm.
and great, great joy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the songs, the first song, Neomus Independent, I love movement. I love to dance. I am like the boss. It's my song. If you see me on the dance floor, you'll be like, oh my gosh, you probably would never think I was a pastor. It's fine. But that invitation to surrender, I think, is the only way to truly live. And my faith tells me, right, that that love is stronger than death.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything that would try to kill you or squash you or make you silent doesn't have the final say.
It doesn't have the real power.
No. And so there's a decision, right? There's a decision on whether you're going to live or whether you're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And my hope is that I'm coming more alive every day. That means I have to be incredibly open to be broken every day as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. When you, this is a pre-record, and when you came into the show, you were at a prayer,
mm-hmm.
midday prayer service. Is that daily through the week, or is that just in the middle of the week?
It's just in the middle of the week. So something that we're doing at Christ the King is we're opening our doors on Wednesdays at 12 noon to 12:30, because sometimes, right, if you have too much time, people are rather intimidated. But it's a time that the doors of the church are open, which theologically, I think the doors of the church are always open.
Right.
Because God's arms are always open.
And where I grew up in Missouri, that was literally true because I could walk in on my lunch break
mm-hmm.
and walk around the sanctuary and sing as a safe place to be and to
yes.
express.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, that image of doors open is rather important to me. And the idea to have a space, especially now, it's freezing outside, literally freezing
yep.
outside, and to have a space where it can be warm and open.
Mm-hmm.
And if you need to use a restroom, there's a restroom as well, right? And you don't have to pray with the pastor. I can be scary, but you can pray on your own. You can just be still. You can journal. You can just be. And so that is something that we've been doing for a couple of months now at
mm-hmm.
the church, and we'll continue to do so. But prayer is powerful, and a welcoming space is important.
Mm-hmm. And just what do you mean by prayer?
Everything. What do I mean by prayer? I mean how we have a conversation with God, understanding God as Jesus, God as God, God as the Holy Spirit, mm-hmm. Singing a song, dancing, moving yourself, silence, opening yourself to hearing what God is saying to you, which God might be speaking through what you saw on your walk. God might be speaking through what didn't happen that day. Mm-hmm. God might be speaking through the email that came at just the right time.
Right. Or the one that didn't.
All. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I'm also hearing that it's that in the way you're using it, Ann and Barry Ulanov used to describe what they called primary speech, which is the speech that is direct from the core of who you are to another person. Mm-hmm. And that is the foundation of prayer. Mm. Because that's also the speech that is honest in with the witness of whether you call it God or Allah or mm-hmm. whatever, because that's the witness of what's ultimate, or science, right. whatever you want. Right. But it is that speech that does and says what it is, no more and no less.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I hear in your words too, mm-hmm. in addition to what you said so eloquently.
Yes.
Amen. I'm curious, how have you had to change in ways that you wouldn't necessarily have chosen or anticipated, but it's been important for your well-being to do that? This question doesn't fly for everybody, and I'm not sure if it will for you.
I think you have to change, or I have to change, perhaps in two ways, or maybe three. To be open to receive what the world has to offer, which changes us if we really interact.
If you're if you're attached to something that was, mm-hmm. but to be in the world, you have to be willing to let it go.
Mm-hmm. And so you have to be open to learn. And that always, in my opinion, changes mm-hmm. us.
Right.
Also, something that I perhaps started really learning when I spent some time as a chaplain intern in a hospital, as we do when training for ministry. And that is the idea that I don't need people to understand God as I understand God.
Mm-hmm.
That's my God. And
that's my relationship with that.
My relationship with God. But my job in ministry is, how can I help you, whoever you happens to be at the moment, to perhaps be able to get closer to your God? And that's an important shift, because if I force mm-hmm. my idea of God on you, that leaves when I leave the room.
Right. And can I step in here?
Absolutely. I see you waiting to.
I talk with my hands. I talk with every part of me. For me, in that same chaplaincy context, mm-hmm. God is clarity.
Mm.
So my job is to help people be clearer about the meaning of their suffering,
mm-hmm.
the nature of their hope, and what holds those two things together.
Or even to have voice to say, this is hard. This
right.
or is painful. I'm
to
upset.
To witness what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be direct about it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
To own the journey
mm-hmm.
that they are on, because that, from my experience, leaves them, when I walk out of the room, they are more powerful than when I walked in and I didn't do anything.
Right. The role of ministry, I would say, in a lot of ways, and this is because of who I was in the hospital with, my teacher, is to be a midwife, to allow people to do the work that they need to do. And we are helpful, but it's not our work to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The midwife comforts, the midwife cajoles, mm-hmm. the midwife witnesses. The midwife is not the one given birth.
Nope. And the midwife never gets that, never mistakes that, right? That boundary is never crossed.
Right, right. And that was the first sermon that I preached in a hospital at Columbia Presbyterian Hospital.
Boom.
The summer of 1985 was on the Pua and Shifra and the midwife passage.
That's powerful.
Absolutely. With a room full of Black women, some from the Caribbean and African Americans,
mm-hmm.
who were there, and they would not settle for my not giving them something that they could respond to immediately, mm-hmm. viscerally, completely.
Yeah. Wise move.
Yeah, it was just,
For all those who don't know, Shipra and Pua said no to Egypt and what they had to Pharaoh. Say, and instead chose to deliver the Hebrew babies that they were supposed to be killing.
Right. They were not going to kill the lifeblood and the future of their people.
No. They said, not today, not on my watch.
Anyway, so, and so that was two.
That was two, right. And you interrupted me, and now I have to put myself back into what was that third one, which was a good third one. Well, one and two were engaged.
You think, and I'll do the idea at the half hour.
All right. You're
listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest is Sabrina Slater.
That's me, who's trying to remember that third important thing. Right. But what in me had to change?
That you wouldn't necessarily have chosen.
Yes, there we go. That helps me.
That's
out.
A clause,
Thank you.
And that is a
that
clause.
Would not necessarily have chosen.
It's not about what we choose. It's about what we.
Well, sometimes what we choose has consequences that we don't realize.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Too. Yeah.
Okay. So, the piece that has to change in me and will be a continual changing is the decision to forgive, and. The longer we live in life, right, the more opportunities we have to experience the hardships of life or the betrayals of life, the brokenness of life. And we can choose to not forgive, I guess, right? Which I always appreciate the image that somebody once shared. To not forgive is sort of like ingesting poison and expecting somebody else to die. Super unhelpful. And so that's not helpful. But for me, what's happened that I've noticed, even in those especially really hard times of forgiveness, is that where I'm supposed to go, the journey that I'm on, I can't take the extra baggage, or I won't be able to get where I'm supposed to go. And that extra baggage is to not forgive. And that doesn't make it easy. But it means that I have to really ask God for the help. Like, you know what, God? I cannot do this on my own. I'm trying. I can say I forgive them. I can do this or whatnot. But I'm going to need you to step up and do something because I can't do it on my own. And God's been really gracious to partner with me in forgiveness on the heavy loads.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't... So the image, the way you lined it up is that the past can be the past if we're free to move from it into the future. Mm-hmm. But if we're holding on, which is usually either to a fantasy that we can't believe can be made again or to, so we have to forgive the past for ending or for the wrong that was done. This is another form of forgiveness in order for us to not have to carry all of that crap with us into the future. Can you talk about the specifics or of how you've had to learn that? Not just the structure. The structure is important, but
so, okay. One example was it was actually so before I went on that world tour, one of the first stops I did actually was to do a 30-day silent retreat. It's a whole nother
conversation.
Sounds like
a good Jesuit.
It was, you know, that's what you do.
That's the culmination of Jesuit training.
It is. It was my first time actually doing a silent retreat. It was beautiful. I highly recommend it for anyone who has the opportunity to do it on any level. But right before I went there, one of my friends and one of their friends had done something that was really hurtful to me. And I didn't know this person. It was a friend of a friend, right? Mm-hmm. But they had essentially sort of slandered me even on social media a bit. And I'd really never experienced that. Mm-hmm. And I was really hurt because I live pretty openly and lovingly. And so it hurt for somebody to say mean things about me that really actually weren't true. And I couldn't control it. And I didn't know why it was happening, but I knew it had happened. And of course, I was like, oh, God, I forgive them. But this hurts me very deeply. And it took a while to get to a point where I knew that God had helped me to truly forgive them. And so I had said it, I had gone through the motions, mm-hmm. I guess, that we do. And when I really knew that I had forgiven them fully, full stop, it was while I was on this silent retreat. And while I was in the silent retreat, I dreamt a lot. And I had dreamt a lot years ago, but I hadn't been dreaming a lot because, you know what? Life, busyness, right. When we're not sleeping, all the things. And in one of the dreams, that person, the friend of the friend, was there. And I can't remember all the specifics of the dream, but I wished them only well. And so it was in my dream state that God showed me that I had totally forgiven the person, but that was just a gift from God. Like, I couldn't do that on my own. So that was me saying to God, I'm really trying to do this here, and I know I can't take this with me on the next step of my journey. I need to drop this, but I can only do so much. And so God was gracious in that space to be like, you are doing what you can, and here am I coming alongside you to show you, like, it's done, mm-hmm. and this is forgiven, and there's this closure. And it was really beautiful, and I had not had that experience before. But that was just, so that would just be one example of me doing my work, right, with the forgiveness and desiring that, and God being like, I know you can't go any further on your own, and here I am showing you that it's okay.
Right, right, right. When we are honest about what we long for.
Yeah.
And that's a great word, because the length of our longing stretches out, mm-hmm. but there's always something beyond the end of the length of our longing.
Right.
And one of the ways to refer to it is as the more, mm-hmm. and sometimes that more, the experience of that space, it can come back to us as God from outside of ourselves, mm-hmm. or it can come back from our humble acceptance of words that we know, but we've never used them in that way before.
Mm-hmm. Or the Holy Spirit bubbling that's up exactly inside right. you.
Oh, these are ways of talking about stuff mm-hmm. that we cannot fully comprehend or control.
Right.
And partly because they are tied into certain formulaic expressions, some people wince at the language, mm-hmm. whereas it's meant to open up and not to cause a wincing. And so you'll see me dancing in and out of the language, because I want people to both recognize the wince, but also to recognize the wow, you know, which is part of it too.
Right. Yeah. The abundance of life, as some might say.
Right, right. And that language which has been hurtful is also language which is the elixir of life mm-hmm. for someone.
Yeah.
And not for you in that moment, or not for you in that way.
Right.
Yeah. And it's, yeah. Anyway, thank you.
No problem.
How do you see your life unfolding?
Because, day by day.
Well, yes. I knew you were going to say something like that. I didn't know what you were going to say. So when you live this kind of full throttle, fully engaged, you know.
So I'm going to cut you off before you even get there, I think.
Yeah.
But so in scripture, in the Bible, it says there's a scripture. It says like, you know, forget the former things. Behold, I'm doing a new thing. Mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. it springs up. Don't you observe it, perceive it. And so there's this image of like, God's always about to do a new thing and a greater thing and a bigger thing. And I've lived a very blessed life. And so every year almost, I'm like, God, are you really going to do something even better? I mean, like, it's been a really good life. And I want to remember your grace in my life. And I think that's appropriate. We are actually supposed to remember that. But also, we don't know what the future has to offer us. Mm-hmm. And even though I might think, like, God, I don't think it can get any better than this, like, it has. And better is often different, right?
Right. And worse can be better.
And worse can be better sometimes. And sometimes we need the worse.
Yeah.
Right? But I started off 2017 preaching on New Year's Day. And to give some context, before that, I had probably only preached about maybe 6 times in my life in a church or a chapel proper, not including like preaching class. But even adding preaching class, I'm not going to go over 10.
Right.
Okay. So New Year's Day 2017, I began my year preaching in a pulpit in Paris, France. And I'm like, God, what's going to happen after this? Like, really? But what has happened over this year has been ridiculous. I returned back to the States. I got to preach in a variety of ways. I got to preach through all of Lent, which is, for a pastor person who doesn't have a pulpit, is pretty amazing. And so most of this year, even though I was only full-time as a pastor since the end of July, I preached most of the year, which is to say I have preached now over 30 times in 1 year. When the year began, I had preached maybe five. So I got to have all of that experience. I got to do a job search. I got to accept a position that feels even more the right place that I'm supposed to be than when I accepted the call. And when I accepted it, I absolutely felt that God was saying, this is where you're supposed to be. I also got to go and celebrate commemorate 500 years since the Reformation in Germany. I got to see the Berlin Wall. Like, and this came last minute because somebody had dropped out or something, or somebody needed to be added to a delegation. So I got to connect with people all over the world talking about faith and Christianity 500 years since the Reformation, connecting with somebody who is in Kenya, who graduated from Princeton Theological Seminary, who covered me, again, me and the covering in prayer, covered me in prayer while we were in Germany for this new call that I was walking into back in the States. And it felt like fire when he was praying over me. That was a gift. And now I'm here. I've made it through my first Christmas Eve services and everything. It's like Hazing 101 for pastors. And it's beautiful. And I'm so grateful for this life that I'm living. But a year ago from now, I had no idea I'd be here. And it's such a gift. Every day is such a gift. And so I don't know what 2018 will bring. I know some of the things, but just to be engaged in this life that I get to live, oh, it's amazing.
With each year, you become more able to engage more of the life that is given you. So I'm going to frame this in a slightly different way.
Okay.
You opened the year preaching in a major space in Paris. You closed the year preaching in a very small church in Spencer, New York. You are more deeply aware of your blessing at the end of the year than at the beginning of the year. That's an important lesson for us all. I also worked in Spencer in the middle school. In the after school
right down
programming.
The street.
Yeah, for a few years in the after school program doing multi-faith education and science and religion and some theater work and teaching kids how to make foods from all over the world, just as the after school stuff. And one of the things that I found about stepping out, because I grew up in a rural community where people were really open to outsiders, even to the point where we were inviting Japanese exchange students when the fathers of the homes where they were staying had fought the Japanese in the Pacific. And they had to face their own nightmares and their PTSD and the stuff that they had gone through in World War II in order to welcome these students.
Right.
And it was, but that was the kind of way in which they chose to live their faith. That many times, that openness is a quality I find in rural areas where they are not so damn sure that they have what the world needs. They need to figure it out. And you become skillful in ways of cobbling together a life that is full of all you need and full of more than you need. And you have some to share. And sometimes when we have been steeped in more affluence, we don't realize the very abundance or the fact that what is needed is other than what we have. And that's a, you know, so I take the occasion of your witness to offer that story. let's cut to music, and then I've got a couple more questions.
Okay, music.
Yes.
How about Dante's Inferno from the Divine Comedy?
Okie doke. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest is Sabrina Slater. So, Sabrina, the way the show closes out is about self-care. You know, when did you realize it was your job to take care of yourself, and how do you do it? Because many people, I mean, this is, and this is, I do say this from time to time, this in many ways is the most important part of the show. Because what we are not doing well, real well, I think, as a culture, is learning how to put ourselves in perspective with others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah. So keep maintaining that balance and that engagement without either walling ourselves off or trying to wipe everybody else out of our wave so we get our way or whatever. But how do you take care of yourself intellectually, emotionally, physically, throughout the day, spiritually? I tend to see the three of those together as the spiritual experience, but that's my simplification of it. You know, what do you do, and how do you know you need to do it?
What do I do? I try to stay sane. No, that was just for jokes, everyone, but that's also true. So I know I'll need it, because when you live out of balance, you're just exhausted sort of all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that sense, you need it. And if I want to becoming more alive, I don't want to be exhausted all the time. If I want to be able to give to others, I have to give first to myself. The scripture says, you know, love your neighbor as you love yourself. Well, how are you loving yourself?
Right.
Sometimes we're better at, quote, loving someone else than we are at loving ourselves.
Which tends to expose the lie.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. So for me, I don't always get this right. But what I try to do is I try to have some form of movement. And mm-hmm. one thing that I really love is walking. Or now it's wicked cold out, y'all, and there's snow. And so I broke down, and on sale, I got the 6-month membership to the gym so I can go and like run on the treadmill. I essentially refuse to run in like wet and rainy and sleety and icy and snowy weather. You can fall and get hurt, and that's just not helpful for life. So I've done that. So I've started doing that. But there's just something beautiful about being able to walk. I also almost exclusively walk to the church. I live very close to the church. And so I walk to church every day, except for today, because I was coming to do an interview and I needed to drive away right after. But that's helpful for me to be able mm-hmm. to walk outside, mm-hmm. Even just for short distances. Another piece that I do, and this is something that came from that 30-day silent retreat, actually, is I started, while I was there, I was encouraged to talk with Jesus. So I always talk to God. I've been blessed to have a great relationship with my dad. So I have no issues talking to God. I'm like, hey, God, what's up?
Mm-hmm.
And but I'd never really prayed directly to Christ. And it changes the nature of the prayer a little bit, since he had flesh on and everything. We just celebrated his birthday as we do, you know. And that changed things. And so what I started doing was having tea with Jesus, like in the morning. And that's something that can go with you everywhere. You need a mug. Some sort of mug.
Right.
And you need some tea and some hot water. That's all you need. And so that space of sort of stillness is pretty important to me. Even if I don't always get to it, I enjoy that a lot.
Right.
And
if you've done it enough, your body will go there just in thinking about it.
You know,
if you've done it enough, if it's
right.
really a
you don't,
practice.
Right, exactly. You don't have to have the tea, but to have the space to just sort of breathe and to be a bit still.
But you have to have done it enough.
But you have to have done it enough to have that. So so there's that. And even coming in, so this is the first church that I've served, I was pretty clear with having a day off. And trying to hold to that. And now, here's the reality. I don't always get it right, and I'm trying to sort it out so I can. But in that day off, oftentimes, I am more disengaged from people. And I get to have more quiet time or just alone time. And that's pretty important, since I'm usually always around people, which being around people is a blessing, and I enjoy that. But also having space to be alone is really important also.
You've got your extrovert and your introvert going
there. All of it. And when you're talking about intellectually, I am trying to take my study leave seriously and pursue studies that equip me to be, I don't know, just a better person, a better lover of folks. And I do like thinking. I like using my mind. And so it allows me to have an endeavor that's not just like the job, not just serving the community. So it gives me a space sort of out where I'm like, I'm supposed to be engaging here. I'm also engaged with the church on different levels. So it's not all just local. It's also national. It's also international. And that's rather life-giving for me as well. And man, a good nap is just delightful. You can't, I mean, I know there's lots of people who don't like naps, but man, I love them. They're great. So I try. And I've been blessed to have been able to host a few of my friends. And one especially, she has to eat really well. She has celiacs and so she has to eat really well. So what I told her when she was visiting is that she was in charge of food. And she could stay for however long she wanted, but she had to make the food. I just couldn't do that. And she made the best food. And I didn't have to worry about it. It was such a gift while hosting to be able to have someone else making wholesome food that I could eat that nurtured my body. Now, I'm not super great with that when she's not there, but I do try. So like eating well is also good. But I'd say for me, a bit of silence, tea with Jesus. And movement's great. I take Zumba classes at the church.
And I'm gonna when we were introduced, the fellow who introduced us made this reference, and you have to get her to talk about when she danced with the Pope.
Yeah,
or invited the Pope to dance.
Of course, that story. It's great. So as I said, I started this year preaching in Paris, and then in late January, I had the opportunity with people from about 20 different countries to visit the Vatican in Rome. And we got to be in the audience with the Pope and with our group of, there are about 35 or 40 of us. And we got to have a picture, our picture taken with the Pope. It was great. And it's the first time the group got to do that. And our one of our faculty, Father Lawrence, he handed me Swiss chocolates and a card. And I was going to be the one who was handing these to the Pope. I was the presenter. And they're actually supposed to be two other men, one who was an Orthodox Christian and one who is a Catholic priest. And so I think we want all three. The Catholic priest was from Poland. The Orthodox Christian was from Ukraine. And me from the States as a Protestant, a Reformed Christian. And But there was just one box of chocolates. So the guards are like, nope, it's one present, one person. And so I got to hand them to the Pope. So we took our picture, and you have to be proper and you can't just be taking selfies and all these things. Mm-hmm. And then it was my turn to give the Pope these gifts. And I know, not fluently, but I know broken Spanish. And he knows Spanish, of course. So I spoke to him in Spanish and just said, you know, thank you for your life and for just your hospitality to all of us and some other such things. This is a gift on our behalf. And I gave it to him and it was great. He shook my hand. And then it was almost over. He was like turning to leave to go greet other people. And I was like, no, wait, this is all in Spanish. And I was like, oh, will you dance with us? And at first, he was like, oh, yeah, you can dance here. I'm like, no, no, no. Will you dance with us? Right. And it was hilarious. And he laughed and he was like, no. And he touched my cheek. And there is a picture from a cell phone that it really looks like we are dancing. And it's hilarious. And people after the fact, they're like, you're the person who danced with the Pope. And my colleagues were like, how did you do that? How did you talk to him? Like, when did you learn Italian? I'm like, it was Spanish. I don't know Italian really. And I was like, I told you all I was going to ask him to dance. And for me, of course, I love movement. So that's why I wanted to ask him to dance. But movement is also a form of prayer.
Right.
And there's so many who do not have the freedom to move or to dance in our world. So it was also an invitation to join in prayer in this unique way for all those who cannot. But that's really hard to say very quickly in a language that's not native to you.
Right, right. But you can do it in awkward ways, in ways that are somewhat embarrassing, but you choose to live it.
Oh, yeah.
Part of, you know, part of my experience of adult life has been finding a room where I can dance, which includes a chapel at Union Seminary while I was a student there, where I would go to sing and dance alone to not be interrupted.
Yeah.
Because that allowing yourself to live full on. And this is the gift of your presence, which can be heard over the radio, but can only be appreciated if seen, if you know what I mean.
Right.
But you can hear the echoes and the timbre and all that goes with it. Sabrina, it has been wonderful to get to know you.
It's been a pleasure. We're going to be buddies.
What should we close? Yes. What should we close this show with? What music should we close?
Well, wait, can I say a couple of comments, comments, Nate? One, if y'all want to see me, come out and worship with us at Christ the King Fellowship in Spencer every Sunday at 11 a.m. You're very welcome. There's a website, ctkspencer.org. And just also a note on the last song, Dante's Inferno. When I was in high school, I also played in the marching band and did music and all these sorts of things. And so I've played Dante's Inferno, and it's just really powerful, I think, how music allows us to move and to voice things that we don't have the words for. And so some of the songs that I selected today was just to sort of show a piece of who I am from different spaces. And I don't think we'll get to hear all of them, but perhaps the last one is one from Tasha Cobbs Leonard called Your Spirit. And this is a song I found more recently. It's a newer song, and I've found it to sort of be my Advent song, asking for God to come, not in power, but just the Spirit of God. Enjoy.
Yes, thank you.
Temple, you are the voice, we are your song. You are our God, we are your people. You are the light, we
standing on.
Spirit.